Welcome, welcome to another episode of Between the Bubbles. This is Darren.
And this is Braden. Yes, we're back together again.
Friends. We are back together, and can I just say it for the record, it was really bizarre to not have Braden next to me to bounce off ideas, and especially on some of the comics that we read last week, I was really wanting, especially the as you know how we both felt about the Daredevil annual.
It would have been a lot of fun to rip it apart together.
It would have been, and to gush over Becky Cloonan's artwork on Batman 12, but now...
And I could have let you see Conan, because Conan looked even better than Batman.
Really?
Becky Cloonan's amazing, and her Conan book was even better looking.
I mean, I listened to your review, but I didn't know it was better. See, that would have... Look what we missed out on. So
it's okay. We won't let it happen again.
No, we won't. I'm very glad that we are together again, and that I can geek out with Braden for another hour, because I really... Braden, I missed you. I was happy for your brother-in-law to get married, but wow.
It was a high price to pay.
It was a high price to pay. So, this week's episode, we have some great news for you about the Daredevil movie and the new Avengers Assemble team. We also have tons and tons of reviews.
Yeah.
Not only stuff that we picked up this week, but there's some comics that Braden and I picked up after we recorded our individual episodes. So those ones we'll briefly go through because
some of them came out a week ago, some of them came out a couple weeks ago. But we were basically just trying to branch out and try some new titles, maybe outside of the big two, number one, and number two, outside of the realm of superheroes. So
yep.
There's a lot of reviews for a lot of very different and very interesting books.
Yep. So, and then to kind of do a plug, we are going to do a episode dedicated solely to the Valiant relaunch. And that, so we did pick up some Valiant this week, but those reviews will be in our special.
Yeah, and that should be out in about a week and a half, because we have another short that should be coming to you this week about some Kickstarter projects that we're really interested in. We're doing some interviews with some Kickstarter people. So it should be a lot of fun, and then our Valiant one should be especially interesting.
Yeah,
we're pretty impressed with what Valiant's
done. Very impressed.
You can hear about that soon.
All right, so to get started on the news, the one thing that stuck out to me the most is the Daredevil movie that director Joe Carnahan, and he did the A-Team, which I actually really liked. I know some people didn't like it. I thought it was a fun action movie. He also did Grey. He was slated to direct the new Daredevil movie, and Fox canceled it.
Yeah, they just couldn't have gotten it started by October 12th, which is when it needed to be filming and in production, and they just couldn't get it done in time. It's a shame, but...
It really is a shame, because they have come out with the sizzle reel that was basically made for Daredevil, and it was amazing. It was going to be a Daredevil set in 70s Hell's Kitchen, and I was
gonna have
was
a really
very impressed with
noir
it.
Noir feel... It was going to, yeah, because, you know, as we've talked about previously when we were talking about the Daredevil movie relaunch a few weeks ago, we were both on the fence as to whether or not we wanted the property to revert to Marvel so Marvel could make their own movie on their own timeline.
It'd be more light and probably a little bit more comedy, yeah, not as dark and gritty.
Or whether we wanted Fox to hurry and get us one. And judging on the sizzle reel, I maintain I wished Fox would have just gotten on it. But
it was great. It would have been really, really good.
So now my only hope is that Marvel says to Joe Carnahan, hey, that sizzle reel, we liked it. Come make that movie for us now.
Well, and it would work. We talked about this last night. It would work as if it does place in the 70s, and that you can include S.H.I.E.L.D. by saying we're aware of Daredevil. We're just kind of keeping an eye on him. Because if you take it place in Hell's Kitchen, it's not supernatural. It's not, you know, this world-encompassing event. It's just very localized. So
yeah,
it doesn't need to be part of the Avengers. And it could have definitely worked in the time frame.
And you know, that's part of the interest, I think, in Daredevil. Is he's not... Like, I mean, technically he's in the Avengers now, but he's just not an Avenger-style superhero.
Not at all.
He's not a global terror... big alien fighting guy. He's a street level superhero like Luke Cage or people like that. Where
Iron Fist, Moon Knight.
Yeah. These are street level guys. These are not big threat guys. And so I think that you could work it into the Marvel universe effectively while just throwing peppering ideas of it in the other movies. And again, I don't even want him in the Avengers per se, because I feel like even in the comics, I don't feel like Daredevil should be and really is an Avenger. I'm glad he is, because they saved him a few weeks ago. But, yeah, it's just... It's a shame that Carnahan won't get to make this movie, because his sizzle reel at least looks really, really
good. It was great. I really, really liked it. In fact, it's kind of funny. I liked it more than I liked the Daredevil movie, which I know the sizzle reel was only, a minute long, but yeah. It was really entertaining. And granted, I haven't seen the director's cut, which I hear is actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so now on to the new Avengers Assemble team.
I'm really excited about this, because, and you'll all know why once I start talking about it. Avengers Assemble was the book that came out starting in March, basically to be the new reader's gateway into the Marvel comic universe. It was kind of stripped away from any of the continuity. The team in the first arc, the first eight issues, is basically the team from the movie. It's, you know, Thor, Hulk,
Hawkeye,
Cap,
Black
Iron
Widow.
Man, Hawkeye, Black Widow. So, you know, these are not people you don't see. These are people who you watch the movie and you're like, I want to read a comic about those Avengers. That's what it was for. And its first issue got middling reviews, but apparently it's, by about issue three, it got really, really good. I'm kind of annoyed that I didn't start picking it up when it came out, because apparently it's gotten really, really,
really
good.
Really? Because I got issue one, I'm like, I'm not spending $4 for this at all.
Yeah, but apparently ever since issue two or three, it's been one of the better Avenger books, if not the best Avenger book coming out every month.
Really?
Yeah, go fig. And
wow.
Apparently it's just
been I haven't been keeping
Thanos
up on
has
it.
Been in it. Guardians of the Galaxy was in it this month. So it's been getting really good press. But so I was curious to see what would happen with all the fallout of AVX, the Marvel Now initiative, all that kind of stuff. And what's going to happen is that there's going to be a new main team in Avengers Assemble. First off, we need to talk about who's writing and doing the art.
Yes, because this is what gets me looking forward to what this new arc is going to be about.
This is starting in November again. So issue number 9, Kelly Sue DeConnick is going to be the writer, and Stefano Caselli is going to be the artist. So those are both, they're both very talented. I'm really excited to see them doing this work.
Especially Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Yeah, I love her writing on Captain Marvel. We'll gush about it later, I'm sure.
Yes, we will.
Because I think we both want to gush about it. But the interesting thing is the team of characters who's going to be in it. It's going to be a main team of Iron Man and Hulk, who are science bros, according to the promo stuff.
Which is what it was like,
which is
the Avengers
what it was like
movie.
In the movie. And so I'm excited.
They had a little scientific bromance going on.
I'm excited for the science bros to become canon in the Marvel Universe. And then Captain America, and the important part, Captain Marvel and Spider-Woman, two of my very favorite Marvel superheroes, are going to be playing again together, because Jessica and Carol are just like two peas in a pod. You put them together and everything is better. So I'm really excited to see them both in this team book written by Kelly, who seems to be a writer who really... I know she captures Carol well, and I really feel she'll be able to capture Jessica
and
Drew
think,
very
and
well.
Just seeing how she captures Spider-Man in that relationship with Captain Marvel... I think she captures not only characterization and friendship, but she captures female characters very well, I feel like. She makes them strong.
I definitely
so that's
agree
what
with
I'm
that.
Looking forward to the most.
Yeah, in terms of tone, when someone said, how would you classify the tone of this comic? She had a one-word response. AC/DC. She wants it to feel like, and she then explained that, you know, when you're watching the movie The Avengers, it's pretty great, and you're really enjoying it, until Iron Man comes cruising in, puts the AC/DC on the Quinjet's radio, and just comes cruising in and kicks Loki's butt.
And then you have like a geek-out moment,
when,
and you're kind of jumping in your seat excited.
Exactly. And she's that's what she wants the entire series to be, is that feeling of, they're getting together, this is going to be fun. So if that doesn't sell you...
I don't know what will.
I think you're dead.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It should be a lot of fun. That's definitely going on my pull list in November.
It really is, and I hope I enjoy it, because I was really looking forward to getting into Avengers Assemble when it first came out, and as we just talked about, I was extremely disappointed, and so Kelly Sue DeConnick, I love what she's doing, Captain Marvel. So that was great news. One last bit of news, we just want to discuss quickly this whole Joker debacle that happened over Twitter with DC and Greg Capullo. So Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo have really kept guarded and hidden their new look of the Joker for the new 52. And they've kind of done little sneak peeks, but it was kind of their, I don't want to say baby, but their little pet project of...
Yeah, they wanted it to make a big reveal, and they wanted that reveal to take place when you picked up the book.
Yep.
And flipped to that page and went, ooh.
And so what happened is DC came out with their November solicits, and as a result, the Batgirl cover shows the new look Joker. And Greg Capullo didn't find this out until he saw it on the internet. And he was furious.
Yeah.
I actually remember I was there on Twitter when he started doing all these tweets, and he was mad. He was calling DC kind of destroyers, and he was kind of telling all the fans, do not look at it. This is, wait till we show it, because it's the real thing, and it's going to be, he wasn't saying it was like a wussy version of the Joker, but he was basically saying it's not
Snyder and Capullo's
yes.
It's Ed Bennis drawing it.
Yeah, and he didn't mean to knock Ed Bennis at all.
No, I don't think so either. I feel like their big surprise was spoiled. And
yeah.
So their feelings got hurt.
They were devastated.
And eventually it's all worked out okay. Capullo kind of apologized for how angry he was. But I understand why he was angry.
Oh, me
and,
too.
You know,
me too.
I'm still excited. I will admit, I looked. After this whole thing happened, you better believe, I was on my phone and Darren texted me while I was walking around New York City. And I said to my wife, Cassie, we got to sit down on this bench a second so I can pull up this thing. I need to see it right now. So, I'm a bad fan because I looked.
Well, and I accidentally saw it because I thought it was they revealed the Joker that they drew, or that Greg Capullo drew himself. I didn't know it was revealed from the cover of Batgirl. So, when I saw the solicits, because the cover, I can't really see it still. I mean, it's in shadow.
It's far enough away. It's kind of in shadow that I think there's enough left to the imagination that will still
yeah,
be
I didn't
shocked.
Feel like it ruined it for me. So, I, on Twitter, I wrote, oh, yeah, so it's between the bubbles. We're not going to look at it, and we'll wait, and... And then I realized afterwards when I wrote him, like, oh, he was upset with the cover Batgirl, which I already saw.
Never mind.
Whoops.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. sheepish. So I apologize. I really didn't mean to lie to all you Twitter followers. But I thought it was an actual Joker that they drew. I didn't know it was the Batgirl. So
yeah.
We have seen it, but as I said, I didn't feel like it revealed anything.
And if anything, it's just got me that much more excited.
Exactly.
For it.
So
Death of the Family should be an interesting crossover.
Yes, and... I'm really looking forward to see what Kyle Higgins does with Nightwing, because I feel like his strongest work was the Night of the Owls.
The crossover
issues,
was very good.
Where yeah. Everything else has been okay. So, and Gail Simone, I mean, her best issue was Night of the Owls. So I'm really looking to see how they handle it. I think it'll be really good. So
it should be a lot of fun.
Well, there's our news section. Now we'll start reviews just a little bit after the break, and stay tuned. Welcome back, and I'll get started on the reviews. And as we've been saying in the beginning of the podcast, there is a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we picked up a lot of stuff that was really, really good and definitely worth talking about. And
yes.
Some stuff that was just okay.
Yes, yep, there are some things where we'll definitely ignore it. But we'll get started with Dark Horse, and the one issue we'll get started with is Alabaster Wolves. It's issue 5 of a 5-part miniseries, and this is a series that I'd never heard of, and I went to the comic store last week, and I just saw issue 1, and look, I'll admit, I'm a sucker for marketing. I'm a sucker for box art, for cover art. If I see a book that I hear is great and the cover sucks, I think,
why would I pick it up?
And I will go to a bookstore, and if I see a cool cover with a cool name, like, I'm definitely going to try it out. So, Alabaster Wolves was one of those books that had an amazing, beautiful cover. So I picked it up, and I didn't know what it even was about, and oh my, this is an amazing, amazing series. It's a horror series. It's based off some short stories that the author Caitlin Kernan did, and what they did is they just basically took those as source material to make this 5-part miniseries, and it is one long story, and it's about Dancy Flammarion. She is an albino teenager who reminds me of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because she has an angel from heaven who basically tells her to go kill certain monsters out in the world, demons, and her mission here is to go kill a group of werewolves. And then you have another side character who's a werewolf named Maisie. You have a blackbird that talks that has just this attitude that the Blackbird was one of my favorite characters, and it's just the artwork inside is gorgeous and very creepy and eerie, and it fits the tone because it takes place in this really small South Carolina town that's just basically a modern ghost town. And wow, the writing is great. There's a lot of moments that get you kind of fired up, or emotionally, or they bring out the whole, just the audible gasp because the surprises or what happens. Yeah. And everyone, you need to pick this up. I'm giving an adore it, giving the whole series an adore it. This is one of those surprise things where it's like, wow, I'm so glad that my sucker for marketing actually worked. Because sometimes it doesn't always pay off, obviously. Yeah. But this time it did. This was an amazing, amazing series.
And it's just a limited series, right?
Limited five series, issues? Just five. I think what they'll do is they'll probably do other miniseries.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, wow.
Well, I'll definitely check it out. I'll definitely have to borrow it from you. It sounds really, really good.
Oh, it was great. So,
okay, I just have one that came out actually last week, but I didn't review it last week because I only picked up the first issue. They didn't have issue 2 in my comic store, but they had 2 and 3 there this week, so I read them and I got them both. It's a series called Mind Management, which is a new Dark Horse one. It's super, super dense. The art, it's all done, both written and drawn, colored, everything by Matt Kint. Who's also, I guess, working on Frankenstein, Agent of Shade these days.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very dense mystery of the style of Lost. If you like the TV show Lost, I feel like this will be right up your alley. I feel like the art is very evocative while being simple and just kind of messy art, but it's that way on purpose. There's lots of really big mysteries. Every page has little secrets hidden and densely packed into it. I'm going to give it an explore it. I don't think it's an amazing series, but I definitely think it's a very solid start.
It's very unique, especially with the quality of the actual physical page.
Yeah, they purposefully printed it on newsprint rather than the new glossy paper, so it has a very old-fashioned comic feel.
Which I really like.
Yeah, I'm going to give it an explore it, but I'm definitely going to keep picking it up. So it's worth checking out if you like Lost or other kind of like science fiction mystery stuff like that. There's like a plane-wide amnesia. There's people who can't be killed. It's a globe-trotting mystery. It's pretty fun.
Interesting.
It's pretty fun. And I think that's it for Dark Horse because I accidentally put one of my things that's an Image comic in the Dark Horse thing that I sent to us.
I was gonna say I don't see Revival on your next stack.
It's actually an Image comic, so we'll talk about it when we get to Image.
Sounds good. So now we'll move on to DC, and we'll start with Batwoman.
Wonder
Woman Batwoman crossover.
Oh boy, I've been excited about this for months, and excitement has paid off.
Which is nice because it's always deflating when you read something you build
and you're like, oh, I got so excited. No, we'll talk more about Batwoman later because my archive pick is Batwoman's first big appearance in comics. But I feel like J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman here have really hit it out of the park. The last arc, a lot of people had problems with because of its temporal displacement and it was really disjointed. And the art wasn't as good because it was Amy Reeder and Trevor McCarthy doing the art. And they did good work, but...
It's no J.H. Williams.
It's no J.H. There's a reason why everybody worships at the drawing feet of J.H. Williams. He is one of the very best artists that works in comics these days. And it shows here because he's back on art duty. His page layout is amazing. The intertwined stories of Wonder Woman and Batwoman make sense together. It had a lot of little things that I was really excited about, and all those things added together made for, I think, the strongest Batwoman comic since the New 52 relaunch.
Really?
Easily the best of the entire 12 issues that's come out since the relaunch. This is the best one.
Now, this was the question I always have, because I wanted to get into the Batwoman-Wonder Woman crossover, but knowing that it's... You have to know a lot of her history to really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Could someone like me who had not read Batwoman pick it up and know what's going on in this issue?
There's enough narration and stuff that you would get the gist of it. You wouldn't have all the information, obviously, but you would definitely get the gist of it. And I think that it's as good a starting point as you're going to get as
really?
A new reader.
Really?
Yeah. So I think if you pick up this one and pick up the Origin issue next month... that's hopefully all the Batwoman you would need. Good, to start picking it up.
I wanted to check this one out, but I'm hesitant because Last Arc. I mean, it was just
It's stunning to look at.
Miserable.
It's a lot of fun, and I mean, Wonder Woman is amazing. Batwoman is amazing. The two of them together is, as the arc is titled, World's Finest.
Yep.
So I'm definitely giving this an adore. It's beautiful.
Great. Well, next up, excuse me. Frankenstein Agent of Shade, it came out last week, and I picked it up after we recorded. And this is a series that I've got into because of Jeff Lemire on Animal Man. I loved his Animal Man so much, I wanted to pick up Frankenstein. And I really love the gothic horror villains.
Yeah.
I love Frankenstein, love Dracula, you know, anything to do with werewolves. And I absolutely adored Jeff Lemire's run on Frankenstein. But Matt Kent was doing another series from DC. I don't remember what it was. One of their war titles. And it got okay reviews. And so like
G.I. Soldiers.
Yeah. And so I thought, I'm picking up a lot of other things. Maybe I'll just forget Frankenstein. It was a fun little thing, but whatever. But issue 12 got really great reviews online. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I should just pick up 9 and 10. Or 10 and 11. And I did. And I am so mad at myself for not following through with Frankenstein because 10 and 11 were great, and Matt Kent really continues that just total out there and bizarre world that is Shade. And 12 I'm going to give an explore. It was good. I didn't like as much as 10 and 11, but I'm keeping this series. I mean, he's just continuing right along with what Jeff Lemire was doing beautifully.
That's great.
And the artwork is still by Alberto Monticelli, and he does a beautiful job with just keeping that whole wacky atmosphere. And, I mean, Frankenstein's going in this big, huge monster whale that has a city inside of it of all these outcast Shade agents. And it's just, Frankenstein is the best.
It sounds really inventive.
It is. It's just so different from anything else DC is doing, and it's so out there. And it's funny because Frankenstein is such a monster on the outside, but he's so gentleman and good on the inside. It's like Hulk, where he doesn't view himself as a good person because he's a monster. But I'll explore this issue, but I adore this series. If you dropped off Frankenstein because Jeff Lemire stopped writing, don't. Get right back on. Continue with it. It's
good,
great.
To know.
Next good up to is know. Green Lantern issue 12. And, okay, I had to crow a little bit, because earlier in the podcast episodes, we talked about the big news of Green Lantern having this big crossover event with, you know, fighting the Guardians and all that jazz, and I was one of those people that was just, oh, this will be so stupid, and they're doing it too early, and blah, 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 and you know what? This is going to be awesome.
Change of heart, huh?
This is going to be awesome. This is going to be, I think, I don't want to, you know, get my hopes up too high. I think it could be as good as Blackest Night, which to me is the ultimate
one of your favorites.
Green Lantern
yeah.
crossovers. This issue set it up, and there's so many potential reveals of what could happen, especially with Hal Jordan. I'm not going to give it away, but I'm so intrigued to see what happens to Hal Jordan during the big crossover and afterwards, and how it changes the Green Lantern mythos and the direction. And wow. I mean,
good
the Guardians
stuff, huh?
are such tools in this whole thing.
Yeah.
But the artwork was, they actually had a different, they had two different artists. And the great thing is when you have two different artists, usually you can see the change and it's really jarring and it doesn't flow, but this, you can't even tell.
Yeah.
It's very, very similar, so it doesn't
That's really nice.
Yeah, it doesn't, and I actually liked him more than the usual artist, so I hope they stay on, but this was, I'm going to give an adore it. I love this issue, and it continues. I love seeing the development of Sinestro and Hal Jordan, and they are now, it's this love-hate relationship. You know they care about each other, even though Sinestro doesn't want to admit it, but in the past issues, you get a little glimpse into his mind of how he feels about Hal Jordan, and wow, I cannot wait till the Green Lantern annual that comes out this month, because the one thing with the annual is it's a continuation of the story arc. It's actually important and essential, which to me, I really like, because I hate when you get an annual, like Daredevil, where it's $5 and it's a waste.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with anything. And it's tying in
all the other Green Lantern stories, I think. I'm pretty sure from what I've seen. So, wow.
Should be good.
It's great. Anyway, Green Lantern. Adore it. Green Lantern Corps, now moving on to issue 12. Once again, like I was saying last time, this was a story arc that had a lot of potential that started off great that just ended with a dud. And issue 11 ended with this huge, big monster that now everyone had to fight. And I was hoping for like another little epic battle. And what I got was, once again, a lot of green, a lot of confusion because everyone's shooting the same thing and everyone looks the same, generally speaking, you know, because they're all Green Lanterns. And this is another issue that just was...
Hard to follow the action.
Hard to follow the action, and the writing wasn't fantastic. It wasn't terrible, but it was just kind of average.
Uh-huh.
There were some good moments where, I mean, you see a conclusion to the Alpha Lanterns in general, and that was kind of a surprise to see what happens to them and where they end up. And you see one of the green or the Alpha Lanterns make a very surprised decision with what he chooses to do in a moment of kind of like a little gut check of what you're going to do, a right or wrong move, morally speaking. And that was interesting. But even then, I'm going to give this issue to ignore it. I am going to get the issues that tie into the crossover event starting in October.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, I'm dropping this series. I don't know. It's just, and I love Green Lantern. I love Green Lantern Corps, but I think it's just one of those things where I'm going to do it story arc by story arc.
Something's good, pick it up. If it's not that great,
kind of disheartened and really saddened by this because, as I've said, Green Lantern is the Jedi Knights of the DC Universe, and I love Star Wars, but I have to ignore it.
Just doesn't work. That's too
bad.
Doesn't
work. All right, one more from me, and then we'll talk about one that we both got together. But Nightwing, issue 12, as I was saying last time, issue 11 was terrible. Issue 12 was better. It was better. The artwork was really well done. It was a lot better than what they did last week. And Kyle Higgins, man, I'd actually say this was one of his weaker writing moments. Which I'm kind of, because that's usually the thing with Nightwing. Usually it's written well. It's just the artwork's really splotchy.
Yeah.
But the Republic of Tomorrow has been... They're honestly and literally like a poor man's Court of Owls.
That's what I was thinking. When I started reading this one, I just got bored because it felt like a cheap knockoff of the Court of Owls.
Yeah.
Which, if they'd waited 2 years to do that, maybe I'd been fine with. But the fact that it started the issue after the Night of Owls crossover...
And they're the same thing. There's this organization that wants to kind of control the city and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, whatever.
And you're street thugs. After you just had the whole Court of Owl of... The elite of Gotham running and how big it was, it just doesn't work. And then the villain Paragon, you know, this is where he reveals himself, but you don't know really who he is. You know what he looks like now.
Yeah.
But they don't go into detail of what motivated him to be who he is and to start the organization. They did tie something into the issue one of Nightwing, which I thought was nice, but other than that, this is... I'm going to give an explore it. I mean, it wasn't awful. It wasn't like last
but it wasn't
issue.
Great.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I'm going to give explore it. But this is after the tie-ins to the death of the family. I'm not doing this series anymore. It's been really hit or miss. I know some people love it.
It's too much of the good stuff out there.
Exactly. So Nightwing issue 12, explore it. But yeah, I think I'm. Which is too bad. I want to support Kyle Higgins, but I just can't get into it. So.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so, let's talk Wonder Woman.
All right, you go first. I've been talking for like 10 minutes.
If you are not picking up Wonder Woman, you are missing out maybe the best book of the New 52. And sorry, but that was stupid. You should have been buying this the whole time.
And don't not pick it up because it's Wonder Woman and you think, oh, she's not interesting.
She is so much more interesting than Superman could ever be. And I like her more than Batman. Of the Trinity, Wonder Woman's clearly my favorite. I know you're a Batman guy, but I'm a Wonder Woman guy, and I think that she's amazing, and I love what Azzarello and Chiang are doing with her.
Well, this is the thing. Of all the knocks that the New 52 has gotten, it got me to pick up Wonder Woman, which before I was like...
You would have never picked up Wonder Woman.
No, never, 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 never. And this is my second favorite series after the Scott Snyder Batman series of any comic book going on right now.
Yeah.
And Wonder Woman went from, I didn't even think about her, to, like, yeah, she's now...
To why don't they make Wonder Woman shirts for dudes?
Really? Really?
Because I would wear one every day. You would wear it.
And this is a question I want to ask you, Brayden.
Yes, sir.
Because I felt like Wonder Woman issue 12 was not only one of the best issues of the New 52... I think it's one of the best issues the whole year of any comic book. I would put...
It'll be in my top 10 favorite issues of the year, I think.
Mine, it's my second. The first one was Batman. Is it issue 5 or 6 where he's in the Court of Owls and, you know, you're twisting the page because he's going crazy?
Six.
Favorite because I was so... It was totally unexpected, especially when you have Batman's bloodshot eye. Like, who does that where one eye's still the white slit, but the one's just totally bloodshot and you can tell that he's getting crazy? That was my favorite, but this was my second favorite of the year.
It's so good.
There's so many moments that just, like, oh my gosh, or just the audible gas, or, you know, the twists and turns, and they explain how she flies, which...
Yeah, she gets the power of flight in this issue, which I've never really understood why Wonder Woman could fly. I get it now.
Now it makes sense.
It all makes sense.
The two,
not necessarily twist endings, but the two big reveals... Well, I guess there's actually three, one of which isn't really explained yet, but there's three big reveals, one of which is pretty cool, one of which is unexplained, and the other of which had me squealing as I sat at my desk reading this.
Yep.
We won't ruin it for you, but there's some good fun coming to the New 52 thanks to this book.
There was so much going on, and the artwork, once again, Cliff Chang.
He's amazing.
Perfect.
He just
perfect.
He draws, and again, if you think that Wonder Woman is like a lady and she's too feminine,
she is
more like physical and powerful looking than even Superman looks on his best day.
Yep. This is the thing I love the most about this issue is you see Wonder Woman as a strong character physically. You see her as a caring character emotionally with how she talks to Zola and the protection. You see how she gets once again her powers, but you also see how strong-willed and dedicated and loyal she is. I mean, you see everything that you want to have in a superhero character. You see in Wonder Woman in this issue, not in the whole story arc. I mean, you do see that in a story arc, but to portray
this
all those elements in one
and
20-something pages.
Yeah, this is the culmination.
Incredible.
She's kicking the butt of gods, man.
Yeah, and that's what I love is that it's dealing with Greek mythology again, and it's so
And she's kicking their butts.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's Wonder Woman.
Oh,
doesn't matter if you're a god.
I love when she throws off the gauntlets. That was...
Yeah, and kicks Artemis's butt.
Yep, yep. Which I didn't know that the gauntlets were gauntlets of Artemis until... Because I was confused when I read that, because I wasn't too familiar with her history, with Wonder Woman's history. So... for any of you who aren't familiar as well like me and you're wondering why she threw him off and said to Artemis, you know, my cuffs were yours, I didn't know what that really meant. Because it was talking about defense, you know.
Yeah.
It's the gauntlets of Artemis. So that's where it comes from. So
anyway,
I just want to clear that up for anyone like
you,
me.
You need to be picking
meant.
This book up.
Yep.
I'm super excited. This is one where I'm really excited for the origin issue next month. And... this is the wrap of an arc, so if you haven't been picking it up, start with the issue zero next month.
Yep.
And you will be glad you did.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. All right, now moving on to Vertigo.
Yeah, DC Vertigo. I picked up both issues of Punk Rock Jesus this week, and guess what? It was freaking awesome. It is freaking awesome. Like, when you hear the premise of this story, you're like, oh, they're making a clone of Jesus from the Shroud of Turin, and, like, implanting it in a virgin 18-year-old and then making it a reality TV show. I don't know how comfortable I feel with this situation. No, this book is brilliant. It is amazing.
So it's not blasphemous towards, if you're a Christian.
J2, little Chris, that's his name, the clone of Jesus. He's still an infant by the end of issue two. I don't know how he's going to become a punk rock Jesus in the next four issues, because we only got four issues left. But this is a phenomenal book. There's all sorts of twists and turns. There's a twin sister that accidentally is in the womb with little baby Jesus.
Wow.
Which they've now hidden away. I mean, there is so much going on in every page. It's printed on newsprint rather than...
And it's black and white.
Yeah, it's black and white. It's not a single ad in the whole book, which I appreciate,
really?
As we've talked about. Not a single
That's
ad.
Really surprising.
It's definitely a unique take on religion and on fundamentalism and all this kind of stuff. There's this mean old bodyguard who used to be in the IRA who works as the bodyguard because he believes that this is the second coming of Jesus and he needs to be absolved of his sins because he's killed so many people. And there's so many characters that are so multi-layered and faceted. I'm glad I'm picking it up, if only to say that I was here when it happened.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited. Again, it came out at the beginning of the month. I'll give you a more in-depth review when issue 3 comes out at the beginning of September. I'm really glad I picked these books up.
Yeah, I've actually, since you totally just went crazy for it.
You should read it.
Talking to me, yeah, I actually want to go pick it up now.
You should read it.
Because I was hesitant, like, I have no idea what this is going to be like.
Yeah. It's worth your, especially $3, it's worth your $3.
Totally worth it.
Okay, so I guess we're on to IDW stuff now. This is all stuff that came out at least a week ago, so we can be quick about it, but it's stuff that's worth talking about.
Yeah, so I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I want to try that series because I grew up with the cartoons. I grew up loving the Ghostbuster movies and the Ghostbuster cartoons.
With good reason.
Do you remember the Big Wheels?
Yes.
I had a Ghostbusters Big Wheel.
Nice.
It was white, and the seats were blue, and it had the stickers on it, and I felt like a Ghostbuster.
That's a pretty great
I had
big
a
wheel.
Ghostbuster slime pack. I mean, the slime was foam, but you're like, you know.
Yeah,
you had one of those?
I had one of those.
Yeah, so I love the Ghostbusters, and so when I saw the Ghostbusters comic book from IDW, I'm like, I have to pick this out, and it does not disappoint. If you were a fan of the movies or the cartoon or any way, you have to get this series, and I would say adore it. I'm going to give that review. If you kind of like the movies, you enjoyed them, but you're not a huge fan, I'd definitely say explore it, because it feels like Ghostbusters with the different ghosts, with the interactions of the different characters. Peter is still Peter, and it's great. I'm going to give it a definite adore it for Ghostbuster fans, and definitely explore it for semi-Ghostbuster fans, or even if you don't like the movies. This is a great series.
It's
by
a good series.
IDW.
It's good to know.
Wonderful.
I picked up, because every review site gave this a perfect score last week, and I thought to myself, this is Godzilla, the Half-Century War. Godzilla book? Really?
Godzilla.
You're going to give it a 10 out of 10 IGN? You're going to give it 5 stars every other website in the world? It's Godzilla. But I put my $4 where my mouth was, and it was worth my $4 and then some. This was a great issue.
Why? Because I'm still...
The art is astonishing.
Fascinated that everyone's loved it, because I haven't read about Godzilla.
The art is astonishing. It's both written and drawn by James Stokoe. He does everything in this issue himself, other than a little bit of help with the color. He does all the lettering, he does all the writing, and it's just gorgeous to look at. It's got dense pages. Godzilla really feels like an elemental, dangerous creature here, and it's got main characters who are intriguing. I thoroughly enjoyed this. It was really, really good. So I give it an adore it, and it's a 5-issue limited series.
I was expecting.
Yeah, it's a 5-issue
limited
series. So it's a thing.
That's good.
It's only 5 issues, so you know you're not getting in it for the long haul or anything. It's worth your $4.
Wow, if that's the case, then I actually might pick it up.
Go pick it up. You'll be glad you did.
I thought it was an actual series. I'm like, I don't want to get
a new
series.
Book all about... No, it's 5 issues. It's gorgeous looking. It's about this guy who fights Godzilla when he very first appears back in the 50s. And he's one of the few people who survives that first appearance of Godzilla. And basically, he gets drafted by the Japanese Defense Force to being a monster fighter.
Wow.
And that's where it's
wow.
at. And he has a half-century-long obsession with Godzilla.
Wow.
And, yeah. I've never really picked up any IDW books before, because they do a lot of... like we've talked about, they do a lot of intellectual properties, things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Ghostbusters, Godzilla.
Do they do Star Trek? Are they the ones who do Star Trek?
They do Star Trek, Doctor Who, things like that.
Dark Horse is Star Wars. That's right.
Yeah. I'm really glad I bought this book.
Wow.
You should go get it. It's really good.
Yeah, I want to check it out.
It's really good.
One more IDW, an old one, Infected, issue 1. This was, I guess it's based off of a book, and the cover, once again, here's a marketing sucker move when it goes bad. The cover is awesome. Like, it has this guy with a gun, and it has, it looks...
That's a pretty great looking cover.
Yeah, and it has these people in hazmat suits, and the word infected, you know, it's like, wow, is this, like, outbreak or whatnot? So what it is, it's a series where, as I said, based off a novel, I think it's a miniseries. They didn't really explain it, so I'm guessing that it is. And it's this virus that goes around that causes people to go crazy and kill their family and themselves. And I will say this. This was boring as all get out. About 10 pages in, I'm like, whoa, why am I reading this?
I hate when that happens.
So, yeah, once again, it was $4. Like, oh, crap. So, I mean, it's just, it tries to be gory for the sake of just being gory. And it's one of those things, like, I don't mind swearing, but when they swear just to be... I feel like when
just
they swear, just to be provocative, and it's just silly. It's like, you've now, you've made me feel like I'm a teenager again. And that's what I feel like they're doing here. It just, and it doesn't know if it wants to be a novel or a comic book. You have certain things like Marvel did with Ender's Game, Ender Shadow, Dracula, which I'm going to do from the archives next time, where they took a great example of a great book and made it into a very engaging comic book, where it feels like a comic book still. And this, they didn't know how to do that. They had too much narration going on that wasn't inner dialogue, but was actual narration.
Just like chunks of narration.
And it just didn't work. So, Infected, don't be a sucker for the cover like I was. Ignore it. I'm going to say it was dumb. It was not worth my money.
Good to know. I will not buy it. Okay, I'm going to talk real quick about three issues that came out from Image this month, or this week. Fatal, issue 7, it's been almost 2 months since we've had a book.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And it's a shame because Brubaker and Phillips are amazing. And Brubaker even admits in the page where he, like, wraps stuff up at the end, he says, "That's late. It's my fault. Sorry." He says, "This month the secret ingredient is lateness." So, but I don't care when Fatal comes out. It's worth my money every single time. I just want to yell at Brubaker and Phillips, "Shut up and take my money." Because it's so good. This is not a good stepping place on for new readers. You need if you were wanted to pick this up, you would need to go buy the trade of issues 1 through 5 and issue 6. This is not where you pick up. But if you've been reading it, you will adore it the way I have. It's so dense. It's so well drawn. It has such a good noir feel to it. It's a totally new arc with a totally new main character who last issue I was like, yeah, he's interesting. He really is developed a lot in this issue. Solid stuff. Everything that Brubaker and Phillips do together is good. The criminal graphic novels are great, and Fatal has just been amazing. So, like I said last time, if this is why he's leaving Captain America, then...
Good for him.
Adieu and good luck. Yeah. Please continue giving me these comics.
Yeah.
All right, another one that I picked up both issues 1 and 2 of is a series called Revival, which is being billed as a rural noir.
This is what I'm intrigued about, because I've heard some good things about it. It's a horror comic,
isn't it? It was really solid. It's a horror comic, and basically what it's about is these people in this town are not dying when they should be. Like, they die, and then they come back. But they still have all their faculties. Their body heals itself, but they can't die. And it's causing a lot of, like, psychological breakdown in these people. And the whole town is, like, quarantined off by the government while they're trying to figure out what's causing it. And it's really impressive. It's got a great, a very, very interesting main character in this single mother who's a cop. Her dad is the chief of police in this town, and it was revealed in issue number 1 that her sister is one of the revivers, one of these dead people who comes back from who can't die. And it's a really great book. It's amazing to look at. The art is really solid, and it's just a really fun horror comic. It's bloody, it's gory, it's suspenseful. I'm going to give it an adore it, and if it continues this good, it's definitely going to be one worth picking up. It's a continuing series. But if you're a fan of things like The Walking Dead or other horror series,
Revival's up your alley, huh?
Pick it up. Definitely pick it up. And then, of course, issue 6 of Saga, what more is there to say than if you're not buying this book, you won't care, and if you are buying this book, you know why. I've given every issue of this book and adore it, with very good reason. It'll probably win, I think, in many comic websites and things like that. I wouldn't be surprised if this is the series of the year in most, if not all, of them. With good reason.
Really?
I'm sad that we're not going to get another issue till November.
Whoa, how come?
This is the end of an arc, and because there's one artist, they got to take breaks between arcs so that she can get caught up. If that's the price that I have to pay for good art, then I will pay it. And I'm sad I don't get one till November, but
It's something to look forward to.
It ends really, really strongly. It ends in a place where you wouldn't expect it to end. It's a great first arc, and it's a great book. Adore it.
Wow, there you go. Well, now I'm moving on to Marvel with AVX Round 10. Yeah,
it was that's the good that has been last issue. This is a treading water issue. That's all this issue is. This is, we need to make it 12 issues. What are we going to do in issue 10? Tread water. Ignore it. Don't. I mean, you'll read it when you pick it up in your hardcover version of it, and you'll be like, well, this was a pointless in-between chapter.
Well, that's what everyone's saying. It's like, don't make it 12 just to make it 12.
Yeah, you didn't need this issue. There's one cool scene. Hope punches stupid Cyclops to the moon.
What?
It's complicated. Don't worry about it. She punches him so hard he goes to the moon.
Does he have a spacesuit on?
He's got the Phoenix power, so it doesn't
matter. Oh, okay.
But at any rate, that's the only cool thing about this issue. The rest of this issue sucked. Other than setting up what should be a really great fight in issue 11, because it's going to end. Scott has realized that even having half of the Phoenix Force is not strong enough. He needs all of it if he's going to be able to defeat the Avengers. So I think he's going to go kill Emma Frost. That's what I think is going to happen
in issue 11. I don't like her.
A lot of people do, and they're going to be mad, but I think he's going to kill her. She's not in any of the promo images for anything after Marvel now. I think Emma Frost is dead.
Yeah.
But that will be an interesting comic.
It looks like she's dying. You know, and one of the things of, you know, they do the ad for just this series.
Yeah. This will be interesting. But again, every issue has come out every 2 weeks in the series. They're waiting 4 weeks for this next one, which is annoying, but whatever. You'll read it in the trade, and you'll be like, well, that was boring. But if you picked it up this week, then you'll probably agree with me. Whatever. It's dumb.
That's too bad. Well, now moving on to something that wasn't dumb. That was absolutely incredible.
So good!
Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Kicking butt Marvel. With Captain Marvel once again.
And Dexter Soy, once again, the artwork.
I think the art was even better in this issue than it was in the last one.
I have to totally agree. This was their element. Yeah. Because they're going back in time, which some people have read online were kind of, oh, great, whatever.
But I think it's perfect. Because
it was so well done.
It's just what she says in here. What does Carol Danvers know what to do? She wants to punch it, kick it, throw it into space.
Can't do that when you go back in time.
When your opponent is, I went back in time 70 years.
Nope.
So she's literally without an idea of what to happen. I love the part where she's like talking about how she knows there are protocols as an Avenger when you go back in time. There are things you have to do. And she says, I just need to remember what they are. Don't step on butterflies. Something about butterflies. Spider-Woman is right. There should be a handbook. And I just love that. God, why don't they give me written instructions? Yeah. I don't remember what I'm supposed to do.
Well, I read someone was saying online through one of the comment sections, so it wasn't a review, but someone was saying, oh, she's an Avenger. This whole time going back in time thing is what they do, and, you know, why would she be freaked out? I was like, hello? And like she says, she's not Reed Richards, you know, who deals with all this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, is a brilliant mind. No, she doesn't know how to react to it. And I love
how she punches stuff. That's what she does.
And so it's taking her really out of her element. And I love how she meets up with this band of women fighters.
Yeah.
Who are all strong.
And awesome.
Yep.
This is, you want your feminist power superhero book? it's Captain Marvel.
Yep, it really is.
Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel are your two feminist power ones, but I feel like this one even more so because there are scads of awesome female characters.
Well, and then there's the whole, I don't know if it's a spacecraft or if it's just a...
Whatever it is. Thing. Yeah, the Prowler.
That was great. And then she was like, I can do this. I can do this. I'm back in time. Don't know what's going on there. But this, I can beat that up. Yeah. And it was just, once again, the artwork was...
Two weeks?
Yep.
2 weeks and we get another issue.
Soy did great. And I love the redesigned costume even more in this issue. Like, this issue...
I think one of my favorite parts of this was the... Did you read the letters?
No.
The letters were people gritching and moaning about the new outfit.
What?
It was hilarious. And then they published it just to say they could.
Really?
Yeah.
I would never read these because usually I don't find that interesting.
I don't usually either. But I read that... I mean, I just saw that they were going to do some people hating on the outfit.
Well, here's one comment from someone talking about how they've been spending thousands of dollars towards Marvel and they've been a fan for 30 years. And then, to put it bluntly, I hate it. Over the decades, my favorite characters have varied from Dazzler to Doctor Doom to Cyclops. And recently, thanks to Brian Reed and Miss Marvel was strong-willed, powerful, and sexy. But then he goes on to basically say he hates it. He hates the costume. Wow. And then he talks about how much he's bought with the old Captain Marvel or Carol
Danvers. Yeah, you know, people are complaining that she's got the name. Figures. People are complaining that she's got the costume. Dude,
why?
Suck it up, why? Guys. She's so much cooler than any of the other Captain Marvels
ever. I think
she's
cooler than Marvel. I think this is, wow.
This is one of Marvel's best books.
So I give it an adore it.
I give it an adore it, too.
Listeners could probably guess.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Yeah, this is the time to get on. If you can't find issue one because it's sold out.
You can start here and be fine.
But issue one has a second printing coming out next week or the week after.
Yeah.
So go in 2 weeks to your comic book store. I bet you can get 1, 2, and 3. Sit down, enjoy all three of them, and say, wow, that was some quality stuff.
Great. Now on to Daredevil, issue 17. And
this was a standalone. It wasn't attached to anything else. You didn't need any background.
You had Michael Allred and his wife, Laura
Allred. Does such good work on the art. This is why I'll be picking up FF in November. It's because I love his like old-fashioned art style. This was a good comic until the last few pages, and then it became a stellar comic.
Yeah, so I was going to say, while I was reading, like, you know, this might be kind of the first Daredevil comic where I explored or maybe even kind of ignore it. Like, I didn't think it was that great.
Yeah, until the Stiltman very, very was funny, and then the last four pages, you were like,
oh my gosh, love it.
This is amazing.
Totally adore it. Yeah, it just had one of those great moments that Mark Waid always does, which just makes you love Matt Murdock even more. And I don't want to give it away, but it just...
The relationship between Foggy and Matt is delved into more deeply here. Mm-hmm. You understand why Foggy is where he is in terms of their relationship, why Matt is where he is. It's another Daredevil issue that I give it to.
I give it as well, and as I said, I didn't really care for it in the beginning, and then it just totally exploded with just...
Just washed the annual out of my mouth.
Yep, exactly.
Just washed it right out.
Last bit, Gambit, issue 1. This is oldest one that I picked up actually on last Friday because I was hesitant because I read some reviews that didn't really give it amazing response, but some commenters were loving it and some more independent blogs were loving it, so I'm like, you know what, maybe I should go try it out, because Gambit was my favorite X-Men from the cartoon series, you know, back in the mid-90s, and you know what,
I feel like Gambit's an acquired taste, and I don't feel like it's one that I have, so...
Well, I'm gonna give this thing and ignore it. Hawkeye was one of those series, well, the issue one, so people who didn't like Hawkeye actually now really appreciate him because of issue one. Gambit won't do that for you. If you're not a Gambit fan... Just totally ignore it. Don't even pay attention to it. If you are a Gambit fan, I'm going to say explore it, but I don't think you're going to love it then.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to pick up issue 2. I feel like that this was one of the first times in Marvel's new little mini relaunch with Daredevil and Captain Marvel that it wasn't great.
Yeah.
The artwork was okay, but Gambit just says some silly... You know, they try and do this whole, like, the phrases that he uses, like, what is it? Maison mon ami, that French phrase and whatnot, and it's very generic. Oh, here he is flirting with a girl in a very boring, generic way. He's doing the whole thief thing in a really boring, generic way, and I just didn't get into it.
I feel like Gambit works best as a supporting character.
He really does.
As a main character. He was great in X-23. I loved him as that kind of mentor father figure in X-23. But that's because he was a secondary character to Lara, who was fascinating. But as a main character, whatever.
Yeah, I'm going to ignore it. Even if you are a Gambit fan, you might not really enjoy this series. So, anyway, well, that's us. That's it for the
reviews. It was a lot of reviews, but we made them through them quick.
And we'll just do our last segment, our hero and villain moment of the week, and then our archives and digital comics. So stay tuned. All right, welcome back to our last segment here at Between the Bubbles. We will have our hero moment of the week, our villain moment of the week from the archives, and our webcomic of the week.
Yep.
So I'm going to get started on the hero moment, and mine has to be the very, very ending of Wonder Woman. I'm not going to spoil anything because we want you, if you aren't reading it, to check it out and hopefully pique your curiosity.
Yeah.
But these are Jack Kirby characters that they're reintroducing to the New 52 that I'm not familiar with. I know a little bit about them, but I saw, I don't even remember actually, one of the DC animated movies where they dealt with them, and they were just awesome. And they were awesome in one of the crossover events that came out a few years ago.
They were awesome in the old Justice League cartoon.
Yep. Yes, that's what it was, the Justice League cartoon.
Yep.
They were great, so I'm just cannot wait to see not only this how they play into the New 52, but how they play into Wonder Woman.
This is a really great introduction of a character into the New 52. It's going to be really solid.
Yeah, I actually had some audible, gasps of delight. Yeah. Because
not like I say, I squealed.
I'm going to sound corny there, but it was great.
I squealed.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where Kelly Sue was talking about where she's watching the Avengers, where you kind of jump up and down and like have your geek out moment, and this was it.
Yeah, it definitely was. My hero moment of the week was just that last page of Captain Marvel when she says, "Butterfly protocols are out the window. It's time to change some history." And she just starts fighting that alien creature, that alien ship, because that's what she does. She punches, she kicks, she blasts with energy. That's how she rolls. And I loved how she was like, "I don't care what the rules are. I'm just going to protect these ladies.
And that's why I'm going to fight them." That's why we love Carol Danvers.
Yeah, Carol Danvers is great.
She is. I've been a big fan of her for the last month, ever since one came out, because I didn't really know her that well. But wow, now
Carol's great. I'm really excited to see her in the Avengers books too.
Yeah, me too. All right, villain moment of the week, Brayden.
Mine would have to be, like I mentioned in AVX, Cyclops rushing off to fight and or kill Emma Frost. Like at this point, I was reading something on Comics Alliance. They go through and do a detailed, like, point by point analysis of the AVX series and like give them points for things that happen. And at this point, he's decided, you know, you can't even say that Cyclops and Emma are X-Men anymore. They are just the villains of the piece. And Cyclops is such a douche that I wish he was the one that was going to die instead of having two Cyclopses in the Marvel Universe now.
Yeah, why?
60s Cyclops and grown-up Cyclops. I hate them both.
You only need one.
I hate them both.
You don't need any, personally.
I hate Cyclops.
I do, too.
But he's probably going to kill his lover, Emma Frost, and I'm going to be like,
and that's something,
what a jerk.
This is the sad thing. It doesn't surprise you. Wow.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely, and when you're the Phoenix, that's what happens.
Jeez.
Happened to Jean Grey, happened to them.
He was corrupted his power before. I mean, he always took his leadership role to a new extreme.
He's a fascist. He's always been a fascist.
Which is ironic, because they're X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, they're always against the people controlling them. I can't stand him. Anyway, mine is another Wonder Woman experience with, I'm not going to say who, but there is a character who I've just really, really grown to appreciate and love in the Wonder Woman series. And this character, at the very end, does a total switch around. You said you were expecting it.
It was a bald-faced betrayal.
Yeah, it was. And I was not expecting it at all. And so when it happened, I was like, oh my gosh. I was kind of crushed and devastated because I really like this character.
Yeah.
I've grown to cheer them on, and when they were, you know, down and out for a little bit, I was really, I was hoping that they didn't die, and now that this happened, I was like, really? You didn't portray Wonder Woman, you portrayed me as the reader.
Yeah.
That's how I feel like. I was really upset. That was, that was definitely the villain moment of the week. Is wow, that is
with good reason.
With how loyal and great Wonder Woman is to do that, you suck. You do suck. I hate you now. Definitely. I hope you die. Really. And you can say that in comics because it's not a real person. I hope you die.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now we're going to talk about from the archives and basically talk about Wonder Woman or Batwoman.
Yeah, because if you say you heard my review earlier and you were like, wow, this Batwoman person sounds interesting, here's where you need to go to get everything you need to know about Batwoman. It's a trade paperback called Batwoman Elegy, and it's written by Greg Rucka and drawn by J.H. Williams III.
And the art is just fantastic.
And this is, it's collecting Detective Comics issues 854 through 860, obviously from before the relaunch. And this is, I think, a masterpiece in comic art. It's stunning to look at, just like everything that J.H. does. It basically introduces who, I hope this person comes back eventually, the closest thing to a Joker-style nemesis that Batwoman could have.
Definitely.
It introduces her origin in a very poignant and meaningful way. If you want to know who Batwoman is, this is where you go. And it's just, it's stunning. It's easily one of my very favorite purchases in comics ever.
And it feels like some moments are, it's more like a horror comic than a superhero comic. Yeah. That's what I felt like.
It definitely does. It definitely has some of those overtures of horror comics because of the imagery and all that kind of stuff. But it's just, I just love this book.
The artwork
alone. Art is great. The layouts are phenomenal. The way that J.H. does the past art versus the present art.
Yeah, you think it's a different artist, but it's...
Yeah, how surreal and like cryptic the newer art is, whereas how simple and clean the newer art is. It's just, it's great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't follow Batwoman, but while we're waiting in line for the Avengers, Brayden had this graphic novel and let me borrow it, and it was...
It's great.
Yeah, it is great. It's something that you definitely need to check out.
It's everyone's favorite library. Lesbian in comics.
Yeah, it's wonderful. All right, now the webcomic of the week. This is someone that I follow on Twitter, that we actually follow as Between the Bubbles on Twitter.
I personally follow her Tumblr.
Yeah, it's caterdiecomics.com. It's written by... She's a young 20-something-year-old.
Yeah, she's a little younger than us. She works at a comic store in Canada called, I think, Adventure something. Strange Adventures or something like that.
Yeah, so... It reminds me of more dark humored Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like Kathy.
It's got clean line work. It's simple drawing, but it's really cute.
Oh, and it deals with her. I mean, it's real life experiences with dating, with
issues of self harm. Yep.
It's definitely one of those things that everyone needs to check out. Because I'm a guy, obviously. But I always like seeing the other perspective of where women are coming from when it comes to dating and dealing with just tool bag guys. Because she talks about one of those.
Yeah.
She had this ex-boyfriend that would just say these stupid things to her.
Yeah.
This tool, just like a meathead. And she deals with just the dating scene, dealing with breakups, but also dealing with just work.
Yeah, dealing with, managing and juggling your sexual identity, dealing with all sorts of stuff. It's just, I feel like she wears her heart on her sleeve in her comics.
Yep, and like, this is who I am.
It's better for it.
It is. It really, really is.
And I love that she's gotten work outside of webcomics. She's done some covers for the Adventure Time comic. She's done some work in the Lock and Key comics. But still, it all boils down to how great her personal art is on her website.
Yeah, what's your name? Kate Leth.
Yeah.
And,
we love you, Kate Leth.
We really do. And you're great to follow on Twitter. And once again, caterdiecomics.com, check it out. And you can follow her at Twitter.
And on Tumblr, and follow her blog. And we promise, Kate, we won't tell you how much you look like Abby from NCIS.
Because she does.
Yeah, but people tell her that all the time. I was just looking at her blog, and somebody sent her a message about that, and she said, oh, yeah, like, that's not the millionth time I've ever heard that today.
Oh, so I mean, I retract my statement.
We're not going to tell you that. We're just going to tell you that we love you, and you're beautiful, and keep being awesome.
Yeah, you're amazing. So, anyway, that's our show for this week. And once again, follow us on Facebook at Between the Bubbles. You can email us. We got new email addresses at talk@betweenthebubbles.com, or you can email me, Darren, D-A-R-I-N, at Between the Bubbles, Braden, B-R-A-E-D-E-N, at betweenthebubbles.com.
We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. And, you know, if you have any ideas for what you'd like us to talk about, say you've got a short you want to do, or if you want us to, say, interview you, you want to get yourself out there.
For Kickstarter projects.
Kickstarter projects. Time. Or even if you're just a big comic fan and you want to Skype in an interview, drop us an email, because we'd love to talk to you.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, happy reading, and until next time.
I'm going to get this right this time, instead of having to record it again and again and again. Between the Bubbles is a production of Almost Midnight Media. Go to betweenthebubbles.com for more information. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and this is produced under a Creative Commons license. You guys know the drill by this point.